Ladies and gentlemen, it is that time. It's Monday. It's a crazy Monday. A lot has happened. A lot went down. So let's kind of get right to it. I'm John Browner. I'm here joined by Jason Lawhead, my co-host for Browner and Lawhead. You already know, if you're new to this, welcome to the Mightier 1090. You can find us on YouTube at Kaplan and Crew. You can find us across any streaming platform where they have podcasts. Browner and Lawhead, we're in the Kaplan and Crew. All that's really, that's easy to do. That's easy to do. We thank you for joining us. Jason, what's up, brother? How's it going? How was your weekend?
I had a great weekend, man. I was up in L.A. all weekend. I did a corporate gig at a really swanky country club on Friday night and did some spots at a new club called the Comedy Chateau. Really fun room in North Hollywood Saturday. And then the Ha Ha Cafe, which I've been an old kind of stomping grounds of mine when I lived up there. So it was fun, man. Crowds were great.
I saw in downtown San Diego to have the Laugh Factory. When did that get there?
Yeah, that just opened kind of, I think, early August. So I'm hoping, I'm waiting. I've been batting back and forth, getting a date with those guys. Hopefully going to be able to, you know, headline some one-nighters there while they kind of get going. And yeah, so because I'm a regular on their road rooms, I'll be in their Reno and Vegas rooms come November. So yeah, a lot of exciting stuff, man. The crowds were out. It just feels good to, like, more and more get a little bit more consistently back to the stage and see audiences. And so I had a great time up in L.A. I was able to see my Browns squeak out a win at a great Browns backers bar with an old comedian buddy of mine that lives up there from Cleveland, Ryan Dalton. We had a blast. So all good, man. And got back late last night after the shows. We did a 9 o'clock show. So a lot of fun. Thanks for the Comedy Chateau and Ha Ha Comedy Club. I mean, I told people up there, I'm on a show. You can hear us. 1090 goes all the way to Santa Barbara. So I was plugging That's us right. to the stage, man, telling everybody up that we do a show. So
who knew San Diego had such a hotbed for comedy, dude? The Laugh Factory, the American Comedy Club, what's the other one? The one downtown, the other one downtown.
You got the Madhouse.
The Madhouse.
You've got, like, obviously the Comedy Store that's been a staple.
Comedy Store on La Jolla.
And, you know, a great friend, Adam Wasserman, who comes in. He's got a nice one in Escondido, Grand Comedy Club. So there's a lot of spots. The old Comedy Palace in Claremont was bought by the owners of a successful group out of Phoenix, Stand Up Live and the Stand Up Live guys. So they're remodeling that whole thing right now. They're in the middle of gutting that whole space into making it more attractive for comedy audiences, and hopefully they'll be open sooner than later. So yeah, it's definitely become a great little kind of second city, kind of how Chicago was to New York. San Diego's kind of being that to LA, and in my opinion, for guys like me and good local comics, even a better situation to get on stage more consistently. So yeah, that's San Diego, bringing it, bro. All we need is a couple more major sports teams.
Well, we better stick to the comedy, because that's a little more expensive and harder to get down.
Keep
here.
Keep building, man. Clubs, buddy. Dude,
if you build them, they will come.
That's right.
Not sports franchises, just comedians. We had a crazy sports weekend, man. As you guys know, if you listen to the show, we tend to start the show with a little something we call winners and losers. The biggest winners from the weekend, the biggest losers from the weekend. And when we roll that over to Tuesday and Wednesday, that's it's the biggest winner from the day before and the biggest loser from the day before. So I almost called you Justin Fields. Jason, who is your biggest loser from the weekend?
You got that Justin Fields on your mind. Wait. I see where you're slipping. My biggest loser from the weekend, we're going losers first, right?
Yes, sir.
Loser, I mean Urban Meyer, right? I mean, what a weekend this guy had. He goes back to Cincinnati, right? Blows a lead. They could have won that game. He gets taken down by the quarterback that transferred out of his school to go win a national championship at LSU. Bad enough you go Thursday night, you go hang out and get beat by the kid that left you at Ohio State to go win a title at LSU. And then you hang out with your family all weekend and get caught on viral video getting grinded on by some, you know, blonde in a bar. Oh, they asked me to come over. I mean, that press conference today was cringeworthy.
Let me play a small piece of it.
Yeah. I just apologize to the team and staff and for being a distraction. Just stupid. And so I explained everything that happened and owned it, and you know, just stupid. Should not have myself in that kind of position.
Come on, guy.
Yeah, he was like stupid. He was like, you know, remember when Chris Farley used to do the Chris Farley show and he would interview like celebrities and he didn't know how to what to say. Like, I'm so right. stupid. I'm just so stupid. It's like,
for those of you who haven't had the chance to see it, here's the video of what everyone's talking about. And obviously, if you listen on radio, you can't see it. So I'll do the best I can to describe to you what is happening, and then Jason will take it from there. So he's at a crowded bar. He's got his hand under someone's center, and they are grinding away. To me, you can't explain this away.
Well, here's the thing. When you really look at the video, I've watched it several times, and you know, his level of creepy, irresponsible, yes, totally, totally irresponsible. And yes, there is obviously a level of creepy because he's married. He was there with his family, his grandkids. He gets lured over to this side of the bar from the restaurant. No doubt.
Listen, let me.
Irresponsible. You can't go down like that. You can't do that. It falls on him, all of that, making that choice. But, you know, look, what would you say? What's more creepy on that video? Is it his level of creepy or her level of zero self-respect? Because at some point, right? She is,
thank you,
handling some business there, thank right? You. I mean, if a man just whisked some woman in and was like, sit down over here, and now I'm going to rub my crotch all over your waist. And, you know, it's not like he didn't embrace it to a point. There's no way out of it for Urban Meyer.
Right.
And you know what I mean? Like, because it's all level responsibility. It all falls on him. He's a public figure. To
grown
the
man.
Degree, right. You know, it's not like he just went 4-0. If he goes 4-0 Thursday night,
this video never surfaces.
He gets away. Yeah, exactly. Or it's just kind of.
Or by the way, you know, if he's still the head coach at Ohio State, this video never surfaces. This is what happens right. When you lose. You're winless. You're in a bar called Urban's, by the way.
Yep.
With your quote-unquote family time. Look, man, for those of you who don't know the full backstory to this, Urban Meyer had the Cincinnati Bengals had played the Jacksonville Jaguars on Thursday. Urban Meyer gave his team the day off. So, well, they gave him extra time off. So
they have a 10-day off, which most teams right. do.
So he decided to stay back and hang with his family because he's got grandkids there. I didn't see no damn grandkids in that bar. I didn't see no goddamn grandkids running around doing who knows what's. All I saw was Urban Meyer shoving his hand up some backside of some woman who, by the way, was enjoying it. So there's no victims here.
No,
there's no victims. No. The idea that this man is at a press conference saying, oh, well, listen, I talked about it with my team. Damn your team, man. Talk about you with your wife because she out here liking stuff on Twitter, telling people she deserves better. So I don't know if you need to be more worried about your team. I think this is just a ploy for him to be able to quit because he's going to be 0-7 soon. And he's going to look around and go, listen, man, I got to work on my marriage, y'all. I quit. I'm going back to Fox. Like, Urban Meyer is the biggest loser of the weekend because this video came out and it was trending. I don't see stuff unless it trends. I don't go searching random news sites. Twitter basically helps me form this show. I go on Twitter. I see what's trending. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday morning. And that's how you get this show. So, Urban Meyer, if you ain't trending, I ain't talking about you, bro. I ain't.
Yeah. No, and at the end of the day, like you said, this is just going to be the big, like, piece of Jenga you slide out that eventually is the one that crumbles everything. Yeah. I mean, there's really – because you can't look at this team and go, hey, they can maybe turn it around and get to 4-4. They're not that kind of football.
No.
They're not getting it to 4-4 before they'd get it to 0-8. That's
right.
Sure.
I'll ride with my loser next.
Okay.
The Chicago Bears fans, we're all losers. And I know that sounds weird to say after watching Justin Fields. If you were a Chicago Bears fan, you watched that game. It was like the heavens opened up. If you didn't watch that game and you only looked at the box score, you would go, I don't know. It looks like he had a decent game. He didn't get a touchdown, and he had an interception. The interception was a tipped ball that every single quarterback gets. And if you saw the throws he was making to get the running back those three touchdowns, your opinion would be massively different about the way Justin Fields played on Sunday. The problem and the reason why Bears fans are losers today is because we then had to listen to Matt Nagy still say that if Andy Dalton is healthy, he's the starter. This is what I will say to Matt Nagy and to other Bears fans. We are the Jacksonville Jaguars. We've got two more wins than they do, but we are them. Because you know why? This team ain't winning the Super Bowl with Justin Fields playing all the snaps, and they damn sure ain't winning it with Andy Dalton playing all the snaps. But going forward, the best insurance you can have if you're the head coach is to play Justin Fields and to prove to ownership that the kid who you just put two more draft picks into to the Giants, that you can show them that you can make this kid a dynamic offensive player if you're the head coach. But you're not going to do that. Because the second you put Andy Dalton back in, by the way, which I'm fine with them playing Andy Dalton, because this is the easiest way to get rid of Matt Nagy. Go ahead, play Andy Dalton, because he's average. And so when you lose next week on Sunday after the Sunday afternoon window when more people are watching, because I think it's like four games being played at that time, when you lose to Las Vegas in Las Vegas and Andy Dalton sucks, they're going to look at you and go, why is Andy Dalton playing? The national media will jump back on you going, why is Andy Dalton playing? And then you have to have another stupid press conference as to why you're now calling plays again and why Andy Dalton sucks. And you could have avoided all of this simply by playing Justin Fields. So the fact that all Bears fans got to see that and now may have to endure more Andy Dalton, who Andy Dalton's okay. He's not pathetic. He ain't Nick Foles. He's okay. But at the end of the day, come on, man. We want to get this over with as fast as possible. If that means playing Andy Dalton so y'all can fire him when they don't win, fine by me, man. But all the Bears fans are losers.
Yeah, it's interesting how Matt Nagy just continues to insert foot in his mouth and just won't let a situation take care of itself.
Right.
And at the end of the day, Justin Fields is your 11th pick. He's not a third rounder you went and got to see if he could be somebody that you could go call on in a situation when quarterback. Look, he went out and got you to 2-2. Right now, you are in unbelievable shape than you should be in that division, right? Absolutely. I mean, the Vikings have fallen to 1-3, and they're a better football team than you. Yes. You're 2-2. You've got the Lions, who are 0-4, and will stay that way. So you're already out ahead of the pack, behind the pack, so to speak, and being that team that goes, hey, look, here we are, and we can maybe find something. This was our 11th pick. This is why we picked the guy, was to go get that win, get confidence, and to be able to go out and say, well, we're going to put Andy Dalton possibly back in, and then Justin will be there in case Andy can't get it done. Well, the amount of signals you're crossing. You know what? Matt Nagy, if anybody needs a viral video of some woman grinding on him right now for a distraction, it's Matt Nagy at this point. He could use a video like that just to get all the press conference sound bites off of his back.
The guy's I've never seen a person get more in their own way as this guy. Like, you had to be nationally forced to give up play calling. Much to your chagrin, you give up the play calling, and then they score more points than they have all season. They get more first downs than they had all season and a half. So I don't know what he's looking for. I think he's looking for Andy Dalton to play so his offense looks smart, as opposed to looking to try to figure out the best way to get Justin Fields up to speed. Because I look around the NFL, Trevor Lawrence ain't doing so hot. The kid in New York for the Jets, Zach Wilson's okay. He ain't doing so hot. Mac Jones completed 19 straight passes last night. You know how many points he had? 14.
Yeah.
You know how hard it is to complete 19 straight NFL passes and walk away with only 14 points? Yeah. All of them are struggling. Trey Lance played most of the second half yesterday. He struggled. It's hard for these dudes. And if you think you're just going to throw somebody else in there because it makes your offense look bad when your offense has never looked good, it just blows my mind, man.
Yeah, bad decision. Right now, the way Matt Nagy's talking, he's making that Campbell from the Lions look like the least craziest coach in that division right now.
Give me a kneecap to bite. I will take it over with this clown talking about. But we have a we had some questions. I got more questions. We're going to do questions. Let's ask some questions. I am inquiring. Ben Roethlisberger did something that I don't think anyone ever saw him doing in his NFL career. He's now passed for more yards than Dan Marino. So this begs the question to me. Question starting to you, Jason, and then I'll follow up after you. Whose career would you rather have, Dan Marino's or Ben Roethlisberger's?
I mean, whose career?
On the field, not in the bathroom, not in Lake Tahoe. Yeah. Not like on a motorcycle.
Yeah, it's tough for me. That's a tough question because when you really look at it, you go, wow, Dan Marino, right? As great as Dan Marino was, and I still think, you know, one of the top three arms in the history of the game, no doubt. He couldn't win one with Shula. He got to only one with Don Shula, pretty good coach. I mean, Don Shula's a pretty darn good coach at least at the time Marino came in, still at the top of his game. They got to one early, and I think his rookie year or second year, and they didn't get to one again. Whereas Ben Roethlisberger won two with two different coaches that weren't named Chuck Knoll. Do I think Marino would have an easier time in today's game? Yes,
absolutely.
I do, no doubt. Do I also think Ben Roethlisberger could have played equally as well as he has played in his career in that game?
Yes,
because he could go get yards on his feet. He could take those lumbering hits. Mm-hmm. Yes, he could play to the pace of the game. If it was a running game in the trenches, he could. So, I as a Cleveland guy, I don't want to give Ben Roethlisberger any props. But at the end of the day, you go, wow. There, you know, with the longevity, with the ability to win two Super Bowls with two different coaches, and the fact that Marino didn't win one. I mean, as much as I love Dan Marino, I guess I'd say Roethlisberger with this question posed to me.
I choose Dan Marino, and I choose Dan Marino easily for me. I understand why this conversation could be very difficult between two people who have an understanding for what the two quarterbacks have done. But what I do know about Ben Roethlisberger as a football player is when the team was successful, he was a game manager. When the team was successful, his only job was to do not lose the game. And to his credit, for whatever that's worth, he did not. And so I will give him credit for that. But after that, when he became the main attraction, when it was only about his passing yards, throwing to Antonio Brown, throwing to Le'Veon Bell out of the backfield. It was very Dan Marino-esque. Mm-hmm. He didn't win anything. He piled up a ton of stats. He didn't win anything, whether it be through Mike Tomlin or whether it be through Bill Cowher. He did not be the driving force as to why you won the Super Bowl. It's always been a defense first, run offense. So I take Dan Marino because to me, you cannot tell the history of football without Dan Marino. You can tell it without Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, I mean that's an interesting take. I don't disagree with that little slice of the pie of telling that story. And Marino, it's interesting because Marino is a Pittsburgh kid. I mean, that's where he's from. He never played for the Steelers, but he played at Pitt. He's from those hills of Western Pennsylvania, where so many great quarterbacks have come from. So it's an interesting kind of question to pose. And I don't think in those two Super Bowls, did Roethlisberger ever win a Super Bowl MVP, or was it Hines Ward and Troy Polamalu? I can't remember if Roethlisberger won either one of those Super Bowl MVPs. So if that's the case, that also strengthens your point of where the Steelers were and are when the big money was laying down. He still played a great game against the Cardinals when they had to. When they had to have it, was it Santonio Holmes maybe the MVP, or was it Hines Ward? I don't think Roethlisberger won one. So, as far as
he did not,
yeah, no. So it was the two Super Bowl MVPs were not Roethlisberger.
No,
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, and there's no way, even though Miami doesn't win it, they're not that Miami team of the 80s without Dan Marino. And if they ever did get to a Super Bowl and would have won one, it would have had to have been Dan Marino to win that Super Bowl, because they were not a defensive-centric team at all. And that's what that was the big reason why the Dolphins eventually really couldn't get over that AFC hump after the first year that Marino took them there, because they just didn't have the defenses to stack up against those great Bronco teams, or, you know, those great, you know, those other AFC teams that went, the Raiders, whoever else it was in the 80s, that went to the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I mean, that's a tough one.
That's a tough one, but that's one that we will continue to fight over when we come back. I got more questions, and we got winners. It's Monday. Brown and Lawhead.
Now, who's my winner?
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, second half of the pod on the Mightier 1090. I'm going to stop calling it the podcast. Second half of the show on Mightier 1090 that is available via podcast. I think that's a better way to wrap it. It sounds more old school and professional, while also still having that new school feel to it, baby. I'm John Brown. I'm joined by Jason Lawhead here on the Mightier 1090. You can always find us on all the social platforms by simply Googling Kaplan and Crew. We are a part of the Kaplan and Crew Podcast Network. I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Lawhead, who comes off a weekend of massive successful performances. What up, Jason?
Hey, man, I'm telling you, I'm just, I'm happy to be here. This is fun. I'm having a great time. I'm in, what, week three? I can't even tell. It feels like I've been here all year. But, yeah, I'm enjoying it, being back on the air. And even though we get this little chunk of time, it's a lot of fun. So hopefully we'll, you know, down the road we'll get some more, because by the time we're done talking, we're always like, what? Huh?
Where'd the time go?
How's this over?
We talked about Bears fans being losers. Head over to any podcast platform to get a feel of that. We talked about Ben Roethlisberger passing Dan Marino, and whose career would you rather have? And we also talked about losers Urban Meyer sticking his hand up some other woman's center with his family next door. Again, head over to the podcast platforms, or simply just go to YouTube and check that out. Winners. Winners, winners, winners. We do winners and losers. Winners of who is the biggest winner of the weekend? Browner, Lawhead. Who for Lawhead?
For me, it's those tech geeks that make GIFs, and, like, you know, the little, the big Twitter GIFs that everybody uses eventually forever when something happens, they use it. And Stephen Belichick, the son of Bill Belichick, last night on Sunday Night Football. If you watch Sunday Night Football, they might have zoomed on him a half a dozen times. And this guy was made, well, first off, he's got this mullet. He's got a haircut that he looks like he gets it in the same strip mall Bob Kraft gets massages. I mean, this thing is like, even a long haul trucker would be like, dude, I can't get my haircut like that. It's bad. And then, you know, you saw some of the faces that he made, and with the on the sidelines. So he is going, from just last night alone, going to probably produce five or six different GIFs or GIFs. I don't even know if I'm saying it right, but just on the Brady return to New England, I think Stephen Belichick kind of stole the show, because he's going to live eternally online. Whenever somebody has something to say or something to post, he'll be the reaction. That's for sure.
I'm trying to grind my way to find this this image. I can't. I'm looking for it right now, because I want people who are listening to be able to or watching us on YouTube to be able to see it. But I can't seem to find it.
You'd be blown away. Like, when you look at Bill Belichick and you look at his son, you'd be blown away to know, if you just had them people, you didn't know who they were or what they did, and you just put their face, or just had them walking someone, you'd be like, these guys, you know, this guy has six Super Bowls, his son's part of some of them. Like, they look like they feed pigeons in the park for a living. That's what these guys.
Terrible, Alf. Terrible, I mean, terrible wardrobe choice.
Unbelievable. They are something else, man. I tell you, he is definitely his father's son. That's for sure.
My winner is New York sports fans. Finally, finally, Jason has been killing them, because it just appeared as if the Giants and the Jets were never going to win a game. I was actually on board with him, but they would never win a game, because they both looked terrible. And somehow, some way, the Jets won a game miraculously. And not only did the Jets win, the Giants beat the Saints to miraculously win a game as well. And to add, I don't know, I wouldn't say injury to insult, to add more confetti to the parade, the Yankees won in a 1-0 game to advance into the playoff. So now it's the Yankees and the Red Sox, which, I mean, ESPN or ABC or MLB Network, they couldn't have asked for a better game for people to watch. And now the Giants both and the Jets get wins. And the Knicks are in training camp. So depending on who you are, that may actually upset you. But, you know, New York sports fans, y'all finally winning, man. Enjoy it while it lasts, because, you know, the Giants and Jets play again next week.
Yeah, I mean, both New York teams, I mean, they look like different teams from the first 3 weeks. And, you know, they beat, you know, decent football teams. Both teams were 2-1. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Titans and the Saints played the kind of games that they wanted to play. I mean, the Titans still got 150-some yards from Derrick Henry. Here's the thing. The Titans and the Saints didn't really beat themselves in these games. Kamara had 130 yards on the ground. They did the things they want to do as a football team, and the Giants and the Jets were able to get in there and play good football for four quarters and be able to win those games at the end of the game, which is really – I feel good for Robert Salam, you know, because I like him a lot, and I'm glad that Zach Wilson was able to have a game that Salam can finally go, hey, wait, maybe this guy, you know, at least can win us some football games and make us better. So a lot of positives for both teams in that one. And I was giving him a hard time the last couple of weeks, but I'm glad that both of those teams got the wins the way they got them. And they didn't just back into a win or, you know, some sloppy win. They were good football wins.
Going forward, we can acknowledge that the Miami Dolphins were absolutely abysmal when Brian Flores first took over. I think they lost the first two games. I think it was like 30-7 or 12. And it was like 40-something to 12-15 or something insane. They were getting blown out. By the end of the year, they start playing better football. Mm-hmm. I think that's what the Jets are going to do. We'll see, but I don't want people to jump off the Robert Saleh bandwagon yet. Let the season play itself out. They knew they weren't going to win. The important part was developing their quarterback and seeing what the head coach can do with what you have on the roster, who you can keep, who you can get rid of. They've got some capital. They got draft picks. Mm-hmm. So do the Giants, by the way, courtesy of the Chicago Bears. So it'll be a great development to see what happens with the Jets. But let's talk about what is happening here. I got questions, Jason. We're continuing questions. I got questions. Mm-hmm. Rams, Cardinals, everyone has been telling you, oh my God, I can't believe how great Matthew Stafford is. I can't believe how smart Sean McVay is. Funny when it turns to October, how he becomes less smart and how all of a sudden, he looks like the Matthew Stafford that I've seen on the Lions. You saw the game. What'd you take from it?
Yeah. Well, I took the fact that, you know, that interception was here. Arizona may have played so far in the first 4 weeks of football, and I know the Bills have a couple of shutouts, but against where they were at on the road, against who they were playing against a team that was playing the way that they were playing that opponent, that might be the best perfect game so far this year. I mean, the Arizona Cardinals were a buzzsaw. And you pointed out before the season, and I'm starting to jump on that idea that Kyler Murray is really exceeding himself right now. If you were to have an MVP vote right now, it wouldn't even be close.
It wouldn't even be close.
And, you know, that was the kind of game where the Rams couldn't make a mistake just to be – if they wanted to just be in that game at 34-34 or something, that would have had to been a perfect game by them.
Yep.
And they still could have lost, right? So I'm not going to panic on Stafford yet, like going, hey, he's not – I still think the Rams did right getting Stafford, and I think that he's still going to be – a guy that they're going to look back on in the season and go, thank God we got him because we've got our shot here in the playoffs. But, wow.
I think getting Matt Stafford was the right move. I think they had gotten everything they were going to get out of Jared Goff inside and out, and so they knew what he could and couldn't do within that system. And Sean McVay wanted to do something that he felt like Jared Goff lacked that, and that was the deep passing game. And I get that. I understand that. they weren't the only team that wanted Matthew Stafford. So it wasn't like, oh, he got dumped on the Rams. There were multiple teams trying to make that trade. By the way, the Bears were one of those teams. So I don't begrudge them for doing it. I take my hat off to them for getting someone who they saw could help their offense move forward. What I saw from this game is what I've been seeing from the Cardinals from day one. Kyler Murray is a different level of quarterback. You have to watch it to understand it. I have had the pleasure now of watching three of their games, the entire game. It may not be pretty at all times, but what it is at all times is explosive. He reminds me a lot of what I see when I watch Patrick Mahomes. You don't know what's going to happen on the next play. That's why when they were running the ball the way that they were to start the game against the Rams, I knew the Rams had no chance. Because if you can stop the Cardinal run, now you can kind of put them in positions as a passing game of getting them to do what you kind of want them to do. They couldn't even stop the run. Right. This is the red flag for me when all the people were freaking out about the Rams. The Rams beat the Bears, who we saw can be hapless at times. They then beat the Colts, who, by the way, aren't good. And then they beat the Tampa Bay Bucs, who have no secondary, who the Patriots almost beat them last night. If it wasn't for a field goal just making the loudest, worst noise ever to hit a goalpost. But God, it sounds awful. You have got to understand what we're used to seeing from the two people who are now married to this win or lose. Matthew Stafford will look more like he did on Sunday than he did the previous 3 weeks. Two, Sean McVay is great in September. Look it up. He's great in September. Throughout the year, not so much as the year goes on, one and two, if he's trailing at halftime, I think he's like 5-17. It's like something crazy, but he's 40-5 when he's winning at halftime. It's the craziest stat ever. But you saw what happens. If they are down, he doesn't know how to get them out of it, and that's what Stafford was for.
Well, and you know, if I'm Sean McVay, I'm less concerned about Stafford yesterday than I am about my defense, especially
the
matchup against Arizona, right? They're a divisional foe. You got him again. You're probably good chance you're going to see him in the playoffs if you're the wild card team, even, you know, coming out of the NFC. So you've got issues on the defensive end of the ball where you felt like you were more shored up and it was the offense that had to kind of find itself this year. Mm-hmm. Well, Arizona just slapped your defense around in all aspects. It neutralized. See, if I'm McVay, I'm more concerned about how Arizona neutralized my big guy up front on the defensive end of the ball than they did against Stafford, right? I'll take my lumps with my quarterback every now and again because that's just the way the NFL is. But you got a 6-time first team all pro. I mean, only active player in the NFL that has that many first team all pros. And he was just taken out of the game. Like totally, like he wasn't even there. I was watching the game going, is it Donald even playing? You know, like that's.
And now let me tell you something about Aaron Donald. You guys know I'm not a fan. Jason may or may not know this. I'm not the biggest fan of Aaron Donald. I acknowledge that he is great. I really do. But in a game like that, it's either on your defensive coordinator or it's on Aaron Donald to be, I will put this on the defensive coordinator. I'm not going to put this on Aaron Donald. Move him around so that he can get after the quarterback. Because what the Cardinals are going to do is say, hey, Kyler Murray, don't be in one spot. Move. And if you do that, it negates Aaron Donald's pass rush. This is what I have been saying to all the people who tell me he's so dominant. Under certain circumstances, you are 100% correct. And to Aaron Donald's advantage, one Kyler Murray. One. There's one Russell Wilson. Outside of those two guys, he doesn't see a lot of people on the move like that.
Right.
He sees more pocket guys who once he blitzes up the middle, they can't get away from him. Right. And that's where he takes advantage. That's why he's been eating teams alive. That's why he was neutralized. And this is why I think they're going to struggle in that division. Because as long as the year goes on, you'll start seeing more Trey Lance. You know what Trey Lance is going to do? Get out of the pocket. You know what Russell Wilson makes a living doing? throwing the ball out of the pocket. We've seen Kyler Murray not operate inside, but outside the pocket. The only pocket passer in the division is on his team.
Yeah. No, and the way and it's just not Murray so much. It's all the moving parts in that Arizona offense, all the formations, yes, all the men in motion, all the different looks they show you. You know, they can attack you on the running game and misdirection. They can obviously Murray can run it and throw it all over the field. And as we said a couple weeks ago, they've really built this skilled position set around him perfectly. It's that's the best football game I've seen played by anybody this year. And you're right. Like, that's what I mean. Donald didn't even get one or two disruptions, whereas, you know, that's all the Arizona defense needed to do against Stafford.
Right.
Throw him off his rail once or twice because their offense played such a perfect game. It was just that score was bound to happen with the way that game just started unfolding early. I mean, they scored that cheap touchdown late, right? But other than that, they didn't score in the second half other than a, here you go, have a touchdown so we can get this clock run out.
One for the better is that I call that, that's for the wagers at the end. That's for the people putting money on the game to try not to get that backdoor cover.
Right.
So I thought that we saw what I thought I was going to see.
I thought we'd see a lot better football game. I liked the Cardinals in that matchup, especially with the Rams coming off that little bit of a hangover of a big win. But, you know, I didn't think it would be that easy, especially on the road. I thought that was going to be a shootout. And I thought maybe, you know, Donald could maybe make some plays to at least put Arizona in some situations that they had to adapt to. They didn't have to adapt to anything. They dictated every single thing. They were probably trying out new material like a comic does. Like, hey, it's going great. I'll just try this one out. I mean, I think they were just trying out plays that were working. I mean, at that point.
I'm going to tell these mother-in-law jokes now. This thing's going so
well. Exactly. Hey, how about this airplane food? I'll throw one deep on that route. But, yeah, they just did what they wanted. And teams are, I'll tell you, the teams that have them on their schedule are not going to be fun. They are not going to be fun to play.
More questions, but I believe these questions were answered. The Chiefs seem to have shook off anything that was wrong with them. They're now 2-2, and they still, by the way, are at the bottom of that division. But are you looking at that 2-2 team going, give us them? Because I know the Eagles aren't after what they just got a taste of, and I know the Broncos aren't because they just got it handed to them by the Ravens. Do you still have any trepidation about the Chiefs?
I mean, I'm the kind of guy, I don't worry about the Chiefs, right? I mean, you only worry about the Chiefs if Patrick Mahomes isn't playing, I would think, at this point.
Fair.
But if there is a worry about the Chiefs, is that through four games, they're giving up a lot of points. You know, they are giving up a lot of points. I think they're at over 30 a game.
Okay, but let me ask you a question about that. Do you believe that's because they score so fast, their defense is on the field longer than most teams who are also scoring points?
I mean, there's something to be said for that, no doubt. And I think, you're seeing my point is this. At some point, you have to set your defense up to not have to play in this space. I mean, I guess if you're going to just say, hey, look, we're going to win 38-35 every week, and if we don't score 38 points, we're going to lose. But I don't think teams want to do that over the long haul. Now that there's 17 games and a possible 20 to win the Super Bowl, I don't know. You know, and you're right. The Broncos, you know, they came back down to earth quickly yesterday. Tonight's going to tell a lot about what the Chiefs have to face going forward in this division between the Chargers and Raiders. We're going to kind of see if either team is for real, maybe both. Maybe they show us a great, great outing that they both kind of go, hey, depending on who wins. Or it's one of those games that even whoever wins, you go, yeah, I mean, eventually the Chiefs are just going to, you know, take over this division. That's why I don't worry about the Chiefs in the sense of, wow, yeah, they're 2-2 and they're giving up some points, but they still, we said last week, even before the game, I said, hey, Philly's scrappy, right? At best, they're scrappy, right? You know, Philly's scrappy, but to give up 30 points to Philadelphia, you have to sit there and go, we've got to look at some things. I don't care how fast we put our defense back on the field. So Philly's scrappy. they needed a perfect game from all 44 guys, special teams and everything. Whereas, you know, the Chiefs, if they get a, if they get six or seven guys playing really good football, they could still beat the heck out of you. So I don't worry about the Chiefs.
I guess I love it when you watch the national media ask dumb questions like, what's wrong with the Chiefs? Nothing. They're primarily based on scoring points, and their defense, although doesn't seem to have a lot of turnover over it, seems to be a little old and a little slower than they were 2 years ago and a year before that. So they spent a lot of money retooling an offensive line after what happened in the Super Bowl, yes, and rightfully so. But you're going to have to draft some defensive players, and you're going to have to hit on them, multiple number of defensive players, and hit on them and on the cheap if this is going to look like a defensive side anywhere close to what it looks like on the offensive side of the ball. So we've got a minute left. What have you seen over the weekend that you cannot wait to get to tomorrow?
Well, I would say I can't wait to see what happens tonight, really. I mean,
happening as we speak.
You know, as we speak, what will happen tomorrow? I don't know. I guess the Major League Baseball playoffs start tomorrow, so that won't be anything until after tomorrow night. I'm curious, I guess, to see, you know, how the Urban Meyer saga unfolds, how tomorrow, the next day, does it wear off quickly? Does it linger into next Sunday?
I'm going to write this down because this is what I want us to talk. You know, this is what I think we should have an in-depth discussion about tomorrow. The Dodgers won 100-plus games. They're in a one-game playoff. So are the Yankees. So are the Red Sox. Why? We'll get to the bottom of that. Oh, we'll talk about it tomorrow on Brown and Lawhead. Topic.